TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Freedom for Julian Assange and all journalists. Support for the journalist and publisher of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, focused on rallies in London and Washington, D.C. on October 8, 22. The former war correspondent and author, Chris Hedges, gave the most eloquent summary of the situation.
A society that prohibits the capacity to speak in truth extinguishes the capacity to live in justice. Tyrannies invert the rule of law. They turn the law into an instrument of injustice. They cloak their crimes in a faux legality. They use the decorum of the courts and trials to mask their criminality. Those such as Julian Assange who expose that criminality to the public are dangerous. For without the pretext of legitimacy, the tyranny loses credibility and has nothing left in its arsenal but fear, coercion, and violence. The long campaign against Julian and WikiLeaks is a window into the collapse of the rule of law, the rise of what the political philosopher Sheldon Wolin calls our system of inverted totalitarianism, a form of totalitarianism that maintains the fictions of the old capitalist democracy, including its institutions, iconography, patriotic symbols, and rhetoric, but internally has surrendered total control to the dictates of global corporations. I was in the London courtroom when Julian was being tried by Judge Vanessa Baretzer, an updated version of the Queen of Hearts and Alice in Wonderland, demanding the sentence before pronouncing the verdict. It was judicial farce. There is no legal basis to hold Julian in prison. There is no legal basis to try him, an Australian citizen, under the U.S. Espionage Act. The CIA spied on Julian and the embassy through a Spanish company, UC Global, contracted to provide embassy security. This spying included recording the privileged conversations between Julian and his lawyers as they discussed his defense. This fact alone invalidates any trial of Julian. Julian is currently being held in a high-security prison so the state can, as Niels Melzer, the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, has testified, continue the degrading abuse and torture it hopes will lead to his physical and psychological disintegration. The U.S. government directed the London prosecutor, James Lewis. Lewis presented these directives to Baretzer in the court. Baretzer adopted them as her legal decision. It was judicial pantomime. Lewis and the judge insisted they were not attempting to criminalize journalists and muzzle the press while they were busy setting up the legal framework to criminalize journalists and muzzle the press. And that is why the court worked so hard to mask the proceedings from the public, limiting access to the courtroom to a handful of observers and making it hard and at times impossible for us to access the trial online. It was a tawdry show trial, not an example of the best of English jurisprudence, but the Lou Bianca. It is imperative that those of us who care about a free press and the persecution of an innocent man for Julian has not committed a crime make our presence felt in the streets. I will be in Washington on October 8th with, I hope, thousands of others to ring the Department of Justice to call for Julian's release, an act that will be replicated by protesters surrounding the British Parliament the same day.
Chris Hedges, he's the foremost historian and analyst of the story of the persecution of Julian Assange. A new generation of writers and publishers is coming out in support of Assange. Here's Taylor Hudak. She's an American-Hungarian journalist and covers human rights, free speech, press freedom, U.S. foreign policy, and corruption. She produces video reports and interviews for Activism Munich.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for having me. I am so pleased to be here speaking about what not only I consider to be the greatest threat to press freedom, but what also many civil liberties organizations, human rights organizations, and press freedom organizations consider to be the greatest threat to press freedom, and that is the prosecution of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. This case is extraordinary. Here we have an award-winning Australian journalist who is facing 175 years in a maximum security prison in the United States because he published information in the public interest and he published the truth. Julian Assange is, of course, the founder of WikiLeaks. He founded this organization in 2006, and WikiLeaks really shaped the way that people viewed media in general. This was namely because of the technology that was used and the very secure Dropbox that allowed for whistleblowers to securely and anonymously provide classified material to WikiLeaks, and even WikiLeaks staff members would not know who was providing this information. And then also to the funding model. Here we hear a lot about independent journalism. Well, that all started with WikiLeaks because they created this idea that you can fund a media organization from donations and from the public. WikiLeaks has published numerous documents, of course, exposing US war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan that really shaped people's perspective on these wars. Human rights abuses, including torture programs in Guantanamo Bay, and also unlawful CIA spying on innocent citizens through Vault 7. And this journalism, this work, won Julian Assange numerous awards. So this is a very important point that I want you all to remember, and that is that the journalism that won Julian Assange numerous awards is the same journalism that has him in a prison today. He is in Belmarsh Prison in England, which is a maximum security prison, and it houses some of the most notorious, dangerous, and violent criminals in England. That is where a journalist is sitting right now. It's absolutely shameful. And just to bring you back to what had happened on April 11th, 2019, of course, Julian Assange was arrested, charged with 17 counts related to espionage, one related to computer intrusion. The espionage charges are related to the receipt and publication of classified material. And I'll continue on here with the persecution of Julian Assange. So as a result of doing this work, we all know many people suffer from disinformation campaigns and targeting campaigns against them. And eventually, Julian Assange had no choice but to enter the Ecuadorian embassy in London in June 2012 to seek asylum there. Unfortunately, he spent 7 years in this embassy as an asylum seeker. During this time, he lacked proper medical care, access to sunlight, proper time with his family. He was confined to a very small room, of course, unable to leave the embassy. And these conditions were considered to be torturous conditions after UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Niels Melzer, examined Assange and determined that that was taking place and that he was exhibiting symptoms of torture. So this is someone who has suffered extraordinarily as of this point. And of course, WikiLeaks was still operating throughout this time. And then this is what brings me to when the persecution really started to increase and become very vicious. And it's interesting to note the timeline here. In 2017, WikiLeaks made an announcement that they were going to release information related to CIA spying. And this eventually became the greatest CIA leak in history. And shortly after that, the US intelligence services, we believe that to be the CIA, contracted the embassy's security firm. Oftentimes embassies have security firms, this one did, and it was Undercover Global, UC Global. The job of this company was to protect Julian Assange, to protect the people who worked at the embassy, and also the visitors. But instead, US intelligence invited the CEO of this company to re-network and rewire the security system into a surveillance system to gather information on Assange, all of his contacts, even his attorneys. His attorney-client privilege was being violated. The privacy of his friends, his family members, himself was being violated, and the case is still moving forward. So again, visitors had to provide the embassy employees with their devices. They had their data taken from them against their will, without their knowledge, and then this was sent to US intelligence services. And some of the very grotesque things that happened as a part of this surveillance operation is that there was a camera placed into the women's bathroom, and even the DNA of Assange's infant son was taken from a diaper. That is how depraved these individuals are and what they did to a journalist who deeply embarrassed the U.S. government and the intelligence apparatus. And lastly, I will point out as well that the CIA, in fact, plotted to assassinate Assange. Many of you may be looking at me like, okay, this is maybe a step too far. Come on, you're just speculating. They wouldn't possibly do that, or how could you really prove that? Well, the reality is we had 30 former U.S. officials who went to Yahoo News and revealed this, that yes, in fact, there were serious plans to kidnap and assassinate Assange while he was in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Fortunately, this plan did not come to fruition, but there were serious plans to kill this individual, to assassinate him. And think about this. The UK recently just approved the extradition order. How could it be that the UK government approved the extradition of a man to a country whose intelligence agencies conspired to assassinate him? That is the state of our media right now. That is the state of the Western Empire, the Western intelligence agencies in Western countries, in particular, the United States government and the UK government working in cahoots and together. I will go through the prosecution here quickly. In 2018, there was an indictment filed against Assange. Again, this came after Vault 7. Likely, this could have been a retaliation for the Vault 7 publications, but the government of the United States sought to basically criminalize his work, in particular, exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, and this was the information that was provided by whistleblower Chelsea Manning. Assange was then, of course, arrested April 11th, 2019. Extradition hearings took place in London in February of 2020, September in October of 2020. I covered these extensively, listened in on all of the court hearings. And then a few months later, on January 4th, 2021, a magistrate's court issued a decision on extradition. And it was stunning. We were very happy with this decision. The judge actually rejected the extradition order on grounds that it would be oppressive to extradite Assange under Section 91 of the UK Extradition Act of 2003. This was due to the fact that Julian Assange is suffering from Asperger's and it would be oppressive to extradite him to the United States. Then the Crown Prosecution Service, which is representing the US government, appealed this decision, and the Crown Prosecution Service won the case on appeal, and then UK Home Secretary Priti Patel eventually approved the extradition order. And now Assange's legal team has filed its perfected grounds on appeal, and now it is up to the High Court judges to make a decision on extradition. And I think that you can gather from what I just said that this has been somewhat of an abusive process, and also it is oftentimes that the process itself is the punishment. Now, what happens if Assange is extradited to the United States? Unfortunately, we learned a lot of very disturbing information about what could happen to him if extradited throughout the extradition hearings. He would likely be tried in the Eastern District Court of Virginia, where no national security defendant has ever won a case there. Let me repeat that. No national security defendant has ever won a case in this court. The majority of the jury pool would be made up of ex-intelligence, their family members, and their friends. The case would also not be public, and press would not have access to cover this case because it is a national security case and SEPA regulations would be put into effect. And as a national security defendant, Assange himself would also likely be placed under SAMs, or special administrative measures. He would be housed in a specific unit, isolated from the public. This is actually beyond just a solitary confinement. This is something much more strict. And his access to his attorneys, his ability to prepare his case would be seriously hindered. And it would not be a situation in which he would be able to effectively and properly prepare his defense with his attorneys. In fact, one of the defense witnesses, Yancey Ellis, who is an attorney and often represents people who are housed in this particular unit at this prison, and that is the Alexandria Detention Center, this person had stated that When he speaks with his clients in this unit, they have to scream at each other because of the steel doors prevent them from having a normal conversation. So that is the level of interference we have when someone in this position is trying to prepare a case. So the point here to take away is that Julian Assange will not at all receive a fair trial in the United States if extradited. And if convicted, he is likely to be held in ADX Florence or another maximum security prison. And again, this is where the United States government would like to place an award-winning journalist and publisher because he embarrassed the United States and exposed intelligence corruption. And also, too, because he is being charged under the Espionage Act, he would not be able to provide a public interest defense. Now, some of you may be wondering, okay, but why should I care? I'm not a journalist. I'm not necessarily an activist. This case doesn't really impact me. Well, it certainly does, because this case has an impact on the public's right to know and the public's right to access information. The Assange case criminalizes standard and normal journalistic activity that journalists engage in every single day, specifically related to source protection and news gathering techniques. The Assange case also sets a global precedent that empowers governments to extradite foreign citizens for political purposes. And lastly, the Assange case is a threat to the First Amendment, which has become the global standard for press freedom. Again, to reiterate what I had said earlier, this is an attack on access to information. We have had a tremendous attack on access to information, also when it comes to COVID-19 and a number of other subjects. We see immense amounts of censorship. And again, this case is very important. Assange's fate is inherently tied to your fate, and again, your ability to access the truth. Because without access to truthful and accurate information, we cannot fight for a better future. We cannot fight for anything. Because without access to the truth, we cannot understand and we cannot confront the real issues that are ahead of us and that need to be addressed. And of course, I need to close here with ways on how to help, because this case is not over. Assange is not extradited to the United States. He is still in Belmarsh prison under horrible conditions. The situation is dire, not only for the broader press implications that are there, but also his general well-being and health. At the end of the day, we all must remember that Julian Assange is a human being. He is a son, he is a father, a brother, a friend, and he is suffering tremendously. And those around him who love him are also suffering tremendously. So I encourage you to please act. And I thank you all very much for listening to this presentation. It's been my pleasure to speak to you about this case. Thank you all very much.
That was Taylor Hudak. She produces video reports and interviews for the online publication Activism Munich. She was invited to speak about Julian Assange at the Better Way Conference in Vienna on September 29, 2022. 10 days earlier, Chris Hedges was the guest of Project Censored. Director Mickey Hoff asked him about Assange.
Chris, you mentioned Julian Assange before, and someone here wants us to make the quick announcement on October 8th, San Francisco Ferry Plaza is a human chain for Julian Assange. I believe you'll be speaking in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
October 8th, and of course, why Assange is so significant. There is this great tendency from the state involving censorship by proxy, too, with the corporate media to shoot the messenger, whether it was Daniel Ellsberg or Gary Webb, whether it's Chelsea Manning, Ed Snowden. Julian Assange helped expose a great number of war crimes, and that seems to be among the biggest crimes one can commit. Can you talk briefly about why Assange's case is so significant for an anti-war movement?
First of all, of course, those who committed the war crimes have not been punished. It's only those who exposed those crimes, and in particular Julian, who's innocent. I've covered the trial. I've been to some of the proceedings in London. There were the others I've followed online. I get up at 5 in the morning to follow the whole court proceedings, which is judicial farce. I mean, when you look closely at what's happening in the courtroom, it's indefensible. I mean, the fact alone that UC Global, the Spanish security firm, videotaped all of his meetings with his attorneys, eviscerating attorney-client privilege, means the case should have been thrown out. That alone. But how can you try an Australian citizen under the U.S. Espionage Act. It doesn't make any sense. The danger, of course, under the Espionage Act, it is illegal to have classified documents. However, journalists have not been prosecuted for holding classified documents and publishing them, as I did when I worked for the New York Times, until Julian. They went after the whistleblowers, and Obama was relentless in going after the whistleblowers. But not until Trump actually went after Julian did we go after journalists. And that sets a legal precedent. It means that the mere possession of classified material becomes a crime along with the publishing of that material. Now, I should be clear, I did investigative work for the New York Times. And I have friends who still do investigative work for the New York Times, and no one in the government will speak to them because they know they're all being monitored. We're the most photographed, eavesdropped, spied upon population in human history, and I covered the Stasi state in East Germany. And so that if you attempt to reach out to a reporter, you're instantly identified and prosecuted. That's why Snowden had to leave the country. And so the only people who essentially allow us to peer into the inner workings of government are those people who leak or hack material. And that is why they're so relentless against those people, Jeremy Hammond, Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, and Assange. And just one other issue on Assange. So when WikiLeaks published this material, they published it in tandem with major news organizations, El País, The Guardian, Der Spiegel, The New York Times. And the reason was, I worked at The New York Times. They never liked Julian. In fact, they disliked him vehemently. But they knew that if they didn't publish that material, they would be exposed as being handmaidens of the elite. And so their hand was forced. But that's why the moment that material was published, they joined the lynch mob that went after Julian. That's why the press has been so awful on this case.
That was Chris Hedges. He had been invited to speak about his recent book, The Many Costs of War. The audience also insisted on hearing his comments on Julian Assange. He was recorded on September 1922. And to conclude this broadcast, here is Stella Morris, the wife of Julian Assange.
So Julian is an extremely resilient, strong person. And he knows he has huge support. He knows his case is extremely strong, or should be in a fair court. So he has many reasons to fight on, and he has obviously me and the kids. So he has the support structure, you know, of the family and of the broader community supporting him. And there are many people who are fighting for him. And he obviously draws strength from these things. But, you know, any person would find it extremely difficult to be in the situation that he's in for one day, a week, a month, let alone years. And there's only so much a human being can take. So, you know, even though he's fighting on, and there are some weeks that are more difficult than others, his health, you know, is at risk of catastrophic failure at any point, because, you know, and this is something I didn't really have a proper understanding of as someone who hadn't really had much contact, or any contact, frankly, with the prison estate. You know, you think of prison, you think of, well, the isolation. There's a lot of things that you imagine about prisons because you've seen them on Prison Break or whatever. It's not at all like that. At least Belmarsh, what Julian's going through, there are no, like, lunchtime, you get together with the other prisoners and so on. You eat in your cell. You're in your cell all the time. The interactions with other people are very few. And Belmarsh is a high security prison with people who are passing through all the time. So you can't really develop relationships with people. People are taken away all of a sudden. One of the people Julian had developed a friendship with committed suicide during the COVID lockdown. It's an extremely dangerous and depressing place in itself. And Julian is fighting the most important press freedom battle He's fighting for his life in a very complex case. The longer he's in prison, the worse his health gets. And in October, he suffered a mini stroke. You can just imagine the type of stress that Julian is under, in addition to the physical deterioration that, you know, that is involved if for a person being imprisoned indefinitely, especially because Julian wasn't free before he went into Belmarsh.
Yeah.
He was in the Ecuadorian embassy, which is not a big space. It's a flat in central London with no outside space, no fresh air, and so on. He was there for 7 years. So Julian's health had already deteriorated by the time he went into Belmarsh prison. And, you know, on top of the physical deterioration, there is, you know, the torture of being subjected to this kind of inhumane treatment. That's what Julian's dealing with, quite apart from being apart from his loved ones and, you know, our little children who are 3 years old and 5 years old. We can visit him, but, you know, they're depriving him of his being a father, of being, you know, able to be there for our kids. And all of these things are, you know, things that Julian has to deal with. So how is he? It depends on the day. It depends on, you know, the circumstance. It depends on, you know, the whims of the prison guards. And if they've had a bad day, because, you know, in prison, you have no agency whatsoever. You're you're completely unable to decide, you know, when you go to the yard. If you go to the yard, you know, he might be on the phone and someone knocks on his door. And if they don't hear him answer or whatever, they think, well, he's on the phone, he's not going to go out or whatever. So it's just a completely dehumanizing place to be. And he's been there for 3.5 years and he's fighting and, you know, he's not okay. It's hell, but he's fighting.
That was Stella Morris Assange, wife of Julian, attorney and mother of their two children, fighting with him for his release from prison and against his extradition to the U.S. I hope you find the radio transmission or podcast of this report before October 8, 22, when rallies are planned surrounding the Parliament building in London and the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., calling on Attorney General Garland to drop the charges against Assange. Or find more information later under the title of the rally, Hands Off Assange. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. TUC Radio takes its name from an aeronautical term. Time of useful consciousness is the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness, the brief moment in which a pilot may save the plane. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.